today on Mother Mayhem.
I just want to take a beat here and normalize that this sometimes happens when you're doing trauma work. You have all of this insight. It often comes like a flood all at once. You get this validation of your experience. You see all the ways your childhood wasn't normal or okay as you thought it was. And that can be really overwhelming when that happens. Welcome back to Mother Mayhem, the Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Podcast for Daughters. Hi, I'm your host, Heather Gray. And right before we go any further here, my friends, I need to give all of you listening permission to let out one big collective groan. Here goes. So today I'm going to introduce you to Anna and Elsa from Frozen, of course. I came up with the name and I recognized immediately that you might all collectively be frozened out. I know we have a lot of moms, aunts, friends, everybody who's probably let it go 50 million times. And even though I might annoy you, I also decided I didn't care because I really just wanted to name today's ladies Anna and Elsa because honestly, that's how I see them. They don't even know of each other, if I'm being honest. They don't know one another's struggles. But the way I see it, these sisters in recovery, and I know I'm being totally cheesy, so you can keep rolling your eyes and keep groaning as you're listening, but they're fighting the same demons, and they're trying to find their way into that unknown. And if that is just too cheesy for you, I have to ask if you've been listening to this show, because I am all about some cheesy moments on this. And I always appreciate a little bit of respite from the trauma drama, and I love me a good glimmer. And naming these ladies Anna and Elsa, well, that gives me a glimmer, so the rest of you are just going to have to deal. So today I'm helping Anna and Elsa face anxiety and fear. We talk a lot about on this show about trauma brain and how trauma brain can put us in these places of fight, flight, or freeze. I know I've talked about it before, but for this conversation, I want to offer all of you just a little bit of a refresher. So first, we have fight. And for fight, it usually comes right out of the gate. It's the first thing we see. It's one of trauma brain's first responses for a lot of people. Sometimes with fight, it likes to shoot first and ask questions later. Fight is like the fierce warrior inside us, and it is ready to take on anything. And in moments where you perceive or you might experience stress or tension or conflict, you might suddenly experience like a surge of energy. And suddenly it feels like, all right, let's do this. And you might suddenly be empowered to stand your ground, tackle the problem head on, speak up when something's not right. And sometimes that fight response might feel like something you don't always have a handle on. And that's true for a lot of the trauma and stress responses. They happen so quickly because our trauma brains are working in overdrive to protect us from whatever threat it's perceiving at the time. So fight sometimes shows up in situations ready to play, right out of the gate, ready to play. So then, almost the opposite of fight, we have flight. And flight is like your inner runner. Try saying that on a podcast 5 times fast, inner runner. And that's when you just want to bolt out of there and escape the situation as soon as possible. And that might feel like you're in a crowded room and suddenly you're overwhelmed and all you can think about is finding that nearest exit. Flight doesn't stop and ask questions either. It shuts the whole thing down and it gets the fuck out. And then we have freeze. And freeze is, you know, your brain's way of hitting the pause button on itself. So when you're feeling totally stuck or unable to move or having a hard time making a decision, it's like your brain goes into temporary shutdown mode. And it hopes the danger will just pass and move along if you stay quiet and still enough. And now we have a new F word. on the scene, if you want to think about it that way. A new F word on the trauma scene. Now I'm rolling my eyes at myself. You might have heard the word fawn. Fawn is another stress and trauma response that people are really starting to look at and consider in the trauma recovery space. So here's the deal with fawn. It's all about being super nice and accommodating in really super stressful situations. For fawn, it's like you're faced with conflict or danger, but instead of fighting or fleeing away or freezing, you work to smooth things over and make everyone happy. So you think of it as like people pleaser mode on steroids or an ultra people pleaser. You might find yourself saying yes to things you don't really want to do, to avoiding confrontation at all costs, or you might find yourself going out of your way to make other people feel comfortable, even when it means sacrificing your own needs. Fawning often stems from this deep-held desire to avoid conflict or rejection. And fawning, especially now that we're talking about it more, I think we really can see it showing up in all kinds of situations, especially for narcissistic abuse recovery work. You're going to see it in your relationships. You're going to see it at your work. You're going to see it in social settings. It's like your brain goes into this automatic pilot mode of just trying to keep the peace, even when it means ignoring your own feelings or boundaries. But just like fight, flight, and freeze, fawn is protective or problematic. On one hand, it can help you diffuse those tense situations, and it can help you maintain harmony and peace in relationships. But just like with fight, flight, or freeze, we know this. On the other hand, it can often lead to feelings of burnout or resentment, or lead you to stop taking care of yourself. And it's really important to be aware of your fawning tendencies and to find that healthy balance between being kind to others while also always working to continue to be kinder to yourselves. Now, in their letters to me, both Anna and Elsa are tackling and talking about fear. They're stuck in dysregulated trauma states of being fearful and unsure of themselves. They've lost faith in their ability to respond as the women they want to be, and they want to move through the world differently. So first, I'm going to introduce you to Anna, and I'm going to share her story. So here's what Anna had to say. Hi, Heather. Thank you so much for your podcast. I've discovered I have a narcissistic mother with the help of my therapist, but I wanted to know more about it. I needed another voice to confirm that I wasn't crazy, and you happened to be that voice. I searched for narcissistic mother on Apple Podcasts, and that's how I found you. Thank goodness for that. Thank goodness for that. I religiously listen to your podcasts on my commute from work, and it has helped me tremendously. Thank goodness my mother and father moved back to Ukraine, and I live in Canada. That was their wish, and I couldn't be happier about it now. During my childhood, my mother had no desire to control her anger or her outbursts. I would often freeze and try to figure out how to prevent those outbursts by being a perfect daughter. I was rewarded by mother for doing chores, cooking, and cleaning. My sister, on the other hand, was the scapegoat who was never good enough no matter what she did. So my sister gave up and was lazy and messy. I now understand why, and I see how badly damaged my sister is. I slowly encourage my sister to seek help. She agrees mother was a monster, but she's resisting professional help. I think it's simply too painful for her, at least for now. Can you please advise me on how to unfreeze when I encounter angry behavior? My manager at work cannot or chooses not to control her anger. When she comes to my office and complains about something that has to be done, she has this angry energy that makes me break into a sweat. I start hyperventilating and then I freeze, and I never know how to win an argument, and I'm an extreme people pleaser. After my manager leaves, my thoughts start racing, my inner critic starts speaking, and for the rest of the day, I will go over 50 million scenarios in my head. I just started listening to my inner child. I talk to her, I mentally hug her, but I cannot seem to stand up for her. When the manager is angry or raises her voice, I get scared, I start hugging my inner child, and I mentally cry with her. My therapist says I'm not allowing my own anger to be expressed, But if that's true, how do I allow it? I also notice that I acknowledge when my kids or husband are angry, I verbalize their feelings that they're having, I hug them, but I want to calm them down as fast as possible. Like, I want to live in a world that is anger-free, even though I know that that might be a little bit unhealthy. Please help. Okay, Anna, here's the thing. We can't do anything until we regulate our bodies. Moments of dysregulation are not moments when we should be making any kinds of big decisions. The focus always in those moments has to be on calming our bodies and accessing what it is we need in order to be calm. So in a moment when you're in a calm, non-dysregulated state, I would start spending some time thinking about the things that do calm you down and that do ground you. You might already be familiar with that grounding worksheet that I've offered in previous episodes, but when you know you have a tendency to get dysregulated in your present day, it's a good idea to get to know yourself and the things you can use to cope so you have them at the ready when you end up needing them. All of you who struggle with moments of dysregulation should be spending time practicing and accessing these skills in moments of wellness so that they're easily available to you in those moments of stress and dysregulation. You want to be able to know how to quickly calm yourselves down so you can get clear on what you do want and how you do want to respond without jumping into an automatic trauma response. So step one here is going to be committing to learning how to calm your bodies. It might be a series of trial and error, but you're going to want to get curious with yourself about learning the things and the tools and the strategies you can use when trying to calm down, because what works for one person won't work for another. This is about learning for yourself what helps you calm down, and then giving yourself permission to do those things and to have access to those tools and strategies. I always start with grounding techniques when it comes to regulating the body. Again, I'll attach a link to the worksheet in the show notes, but you can easily go down a rabbit hole for other suggestions and other grounding techniques, but take some time to be curious and to really find out what works for you. Trauma brain has you wired to freeze in those moments of tension and anger. That freeze response saved you when you were a kid, and it's trying to save you now. What's happening, though, a little bit here is that you're learning that freeze used to work for you. Your trauma brain did its job and it got you through. But now, with a little bit more healing behind you, being numb and tuned out isn't really working for you anymore. It's not how you want to be responding. So your desire to show up differently, that's wise mind coming into the picture. That's wise mind greeting you and saying, hello, I think I can help. Wise mind is stepping in and telling you, you don't have to freeze. There's other ways of handling this, and those ways might help you feel more empowered and more in control. So here's what I'd like you to consider in a moment away from work and away from that source of tension. If you were already the woman you wanted to be in this situation, how would you want to be responding? What is the first step you can take toward being her? Now, you might want to be the person who tells your boss where to go and how to get there, but you're not there yet. But where are you? What are you willing to do? And what are you willing to say? Meet yourself where you're at just a little bit. Accept where you're at a little bit and take those first steps rather than beating yourself up for where you're not or the things you're not capable of. Now, here's the thing. I have to be honest with you. Therapy likes to romanticize this notion of feeling your feelings and getting in touch with your anger. And I get it. Honestly, I do. I've had a couple of sips of that Kool-Aid myself. But I have to tell you, I don't always buy it. I think when kids grow up in houses where feelings weren't allowed or encouraged, feelings end up getting expressed in all kinds of ways. you very well may actually be in touch with your anger, as you say, but maybe your expression of anger isn't one that's a typical expression. Just because it doesn't look like anger or sound like anger doesn't mean that you're not angry. After all, you're writing me this letter and you are telling me that your boss is treating you like shit. It sounds to me like you do know that isn't right, that this isn't how you want to be treated, and I think you're just feeling disempowered in your anger because it makes you scared to react. After all, growing up, this makes sense to me, my friend. Reacting to anger only led to you receiving a bigger wrath. You saw that firsthand with your sister. So of course, because you're feeling small right now and you're not storming and you're not norming, you feel like you're not in touch with your anger. But you do know you're angry. You just haven't learned how to be angry in a way that's safe, doesn't scare or intimidate you, and that being angry is something that you have to learn for yourself. Learning who we want to be and how we want to be in moments like that, especially in moments of anger, is also a journey for where we're all at some point and in some way. Not everybody is going to be comfortable showing up in a room and saying that they disagree. Some people are going to want to write an email. Some people are going to decide it's not the hill they want to die on that day. Last week, you might have heard me tell Christy that there's power in saying, I didn't deserve that, when someone crosses a line, steps on a boundary, abuses us, or disrespects us. I would practice saying that here. My boss is talking to me in a way that I don't deserve. Then try thinking through for yourself how you would like to respond and promise yourself you will start to practice that in baby steps. Now, I know from our communication about this episode already that you are in fact job hunting, but a lot of people listening to our exchange, they're in problematic relationships with other people besides their mothers, just like you're in this problematic relationship with your boss. And I want to run through a way of thinking about these scenarios for all of you. In your case, Anna, I would encourage you to get in the driver's seat of your working situation. But anyone listening, put your difficult person in place of Anna's boss and her working situation. There could be any number of reasons why you are remaining at a job with a boss that's abusive. You may love the work, you may respect your colleagues, you might rely on the income. It's easy for people to just say quit when the boss is a jerk, but sometimes people might opt to stay. In these examples, I would remind yourself why you're choosing to stay. Oftentimes, when people are in these miserable situations, it really is helpful if they can take a moment to get themselves back in their driver's seat and re-choose. You know this person is awful and you know they're abusive. You know that it is unlikely to change. So given that, why are you staying? Why are you maintaining the relationship? You want to remind yourself of the reasons you're persevering in an unsupportive environment so that you can get ahead of that choice. Then, given that you know she's abusive, you want to work at not personalizing this. This is who she is. This is what she does. This isn't about me. This is her only way she knows how to communicate. It's not about me. Of course it makes me nervous. She's in a position of power and she's talking to me in an aggressive manner. Of course it's scary and intimidating when someone has a position of power and takes advantage by making us feel small. Of course it's going to remind you of your childhoods when you come from childhoods like all of you listening have come from. You want to normalize this experience for yourself. You want to validate it. I suspect a little bit here that you're telling yourself a story that a person who didn't grow up with trauma wouldn't be as bothered, that this is only a problem you have, but that other people wouldn't. Not so much, my friend. No one takes kindly to an abusive boss and everyone has a reaction to it. Of course you would too. Now, instead of being upset with yourself for having a reaction, give yourself permission to be upset. Because this is upsetting. Then ask yourself what you need to suffer less and see if you can allow yourself to have it. Now, you're asking about managing your anxiety and your nervousness when other people are angry. I would again remind you that it is normal and natural and expected given your childhood. Remember, everyone here, listen in, take notes, write it down, tattoo it on your foreheads. An abnormal reaction to a series of abnormal events is normal behavior. Given your childhood, of course you're nervous about anger. Even when it's healthy or even when it's coming from your own kid, your body doesn't know the difference between so-called good anger or bad anger. It just knows that anger is bad. So when it comes to your husband or your kids, remind yourself, this is not that. Yes, anger makes me nervous, but my husband and my kids being angry is not the same thing as my mom being angry. This is not that. Trauma brain is going to show up right away for you, and it is going to be on alert. Wise mind will help to remind you that this is not that. Look for the cues and the differences. This is not that. See how your family expressing their anger is different from your mother's and different from your boss's. The more you reframe, the less anxious you're going to be when intense emotions get expressed by your safe people. You might always be sensitive to tense tones. You might notice them in movies, out in the public, or with those that aren't as close to you, and that's okay. But you can remind yourself with your loved ones that it is okay. And also too, Anna, do yourself a favor here and keep listening in on Elsa's story and my thoughts on her situation too, because I'm also hoping that you're going to find some relief and some company on the path. Okay, Elsa, you're up. So here's what Elsa had to say. I've been listening to your podcast in order as you recommended. Good girl, gold star, Elsa, gold star. I don't want anybody binging this show. When I was listening to episode 5 about hypervigilance and anxiety, it definitely triggered me and brought up a few questions that I'm hoping you can answer. I'm 44 years old and honestly, within the past 3 years, truly became aware and saw that how I was raised was not good. And yes, my mom has, I'm sure, a cluster BPD, non-diagnosed. Cluster B personality disorder. I just read that without thinking of the acronyms. Rooting in a narcissistic personality disorder. I've always been a perfectionist, afraid to make mistakes, and many more were issues stemming from being raised by a personality disordered mother. Within the last few years, I feel like my anxiety has increased tenfold. Trying to name the anxiety as you suggested, I think it is mostly fear. My mom instills fear, anxiety into me now with our once a week conversations, so I'm most certain that I was wired and I grew up with this behavior. Her go-to is, I'm just curious, yet probing and giving her insight, and I've never asked for it, of course. My question is this, I feel like I feel anxiety more now that I'm older, whereas when I was younger, I'm not sure I felt the anxiety in the same way. I feel it now at 44 more in my body. It's in my gut and it's in my head, and I just can't seem to get calm and tell myself that everything will be all right. I've turned into this little fraidy cat about everything and I can't seem to enjoy life. Is this normal? I did pronounce the grounding techniques. Good job. And I do yoga, which really does help me. I do have a husband who's amazing and supportive, so my picker was on with him. Good job, sister, good job. Although it did take me a few bad picks to get a good pick. Always happens. I appreciate your help. Elsa, okay, so cheers to you for having a good picker. Good on you. I am so glad that you feel loved and safe when you are inside of your own home. First, obviously, I want you to hear everything that I just said to Anna about the things she's afraid of and how she gets scared and nervous because, of course, you're afraid. Your body knows that when your mom is asking for something from a place of quote-unquote curiosity, it's not really that. It's a ploy, a tactic she uses to keep you close and to manipulate you in some way even though you don't always know how she's doing it or why she's doing it or what her angle is, trauma brain is telling you that these calls and these conversations are a bad idea, but you're not listening to your body right now. You're caught in that trap that so many daughters get into when you think it all gets worse if you don't make the call, if you don't acquiesce. But in doing these calls, you feel that intangible pull she has on you. And because it is so covert, you find yourself questioning yourself, doubting yourself, and thinking that the problem's you. So the first thing you have to do, my friend, is slow down a little bit. I believe you. I believe you. Everyone listening believes you. Your mother is trying to manipulate you by getting you to think you need her. She is trying to make herself irreplaceable in your life by making you feel small and making you second guess yourself. Like I told Anna, of course you're nervous. Of course you're gun shy. Of course this is scary and intimidating. So just do yourself a favor and take a beat and recognize that for yourself. Now, your body right now, it is screaming at you. It is telling you that this isn't working. I think it would be a good idea to make a plan for how you're going to deal with your mother. Like I asked Anna, if you were already the woman you wanted to be in this situation, how do you wish you would respond? This might be one of those times when you can use that like gray rock or yellow rock technique. Again, you've heard me talk a little bit about these things on the show, but as a reminder, gray rocking or yellow rocking is when you remain neutral with your mom's. You don't give her or offer her any affect. You remain neutral. You keep topics to low-key things. If your mom is digging for more, just thank her for her curiosity and work on getting out of the conversation. You don't have to be inciting and you don't have to create conflict. Just be neutral and matter of fact. Keep it pleasant and, you know, keep it absent of depth. I was trying to think of a better way to say that, but keep it surface level. Don't go too deep with her. Your experience of feeling more anxious, you know, it makes sense to me because you're starting trauma work. Of course you're feeling more anxious. Trauma brain protected you for a good long while, so you weren't feeling everything in the moment as you're feeling it now, but now you're starting to do that like connecting head to heart thing that we've talked about. So you are feeling your feelings more deeply. Wise mind is coming to the table a little bit, so you're becoming more aware of the dynamics and more aware of your own truth. You're starting to own all of those things a little bit more than you used to. So the first thing you want to do to manage this is to just notice these things. Be curious about the thoughts and the feelings you're having. Notice them without judging them, without judging yourself. This is an opportunity to know yourself, to reintroduce yourself to yourself. You might be learning new things about your preferences, what you like, what you don't like. You might be acknowledging things in your life that you no longer want to allow. Your discomfort is trying to tell you something. So let's just get curious with it for a second and let's get curious about it, because here's the thing about anxiety. It's often the only feeling your mom's ever allowed. If you were anxious, you needed her. If you were anxious, it often meant you were bending to her preference. If you were anxious, you were trying to be perfect and impress her. So you might be funneling all of your feelings through an anxious lens. But as you get to know yourself and your limits a little bit more, you might be finding that you're not always anxious. Maybe you're discontent. You might be bored. It could be disappointment. You might be frustrated or tired. Not everything might be making you anxious. But like I told Anna, your knowledge and your development of your feelings and how you experience them might have gotten interrupted. So just like she experiences anger a little bit differently, you might be feeling some of your feelings or experiencing some of your feelings a little bit differently too. I just want to take a beat here and normalize that this sometimes happens when you're doing trauma work. You have all of this insight. It often comes like a flood all at once. You get this validation of your experience. You see all the ways your childhood wasn't normal or okay as you thought it was. And that can be really overwhelming when that happens. It's normal once the light bulbs turn on to start rushing in and wanting to learn everything and understand everything all at once. And that actually doing that is actually as overwhelming as you describe. So you want to address the places of suffering and distress as they come up for sure. But be careful, be super careful about digging around, trying to learn more and trying to understand more. Your body's telling you right now that it isn't regulated, that you don't feel safe. So before you do anything else, you really do need to listen to it. Walk yourself through some of the things that I shared with Anna about calming down first and regulating yourself first before trying to do anything or make any kinds of decision. Address the points of suffering that are rising to the top and are coming to the surface for you. Address the patterns of behavior that aren't working for you. Take it one thing at a time. I don't recommend rushing trauma work. All of this has sat inside you for decades now. It can keep sitting within you until you have some calm, until you have peace, and until you have the bandwidth to address it. There's no such thing as binging trauma work. And when your body is dysregulated, the answer is always going to be calming down before doing anything else. And if your body keeps getting dysregulated as you try to do the work, please do pay attention to that. And if you don't have one already, do consider getting yourself a therapist to help you, but prioritize the things that are calming and work on consistently offering yourself calm and comfort to all five of your senses before you go about doing anything else. Trauma work shouldn't leave you feeling scared all of the time. Sometimes, as the case with the phone calls to your mom, your body is saying, pay attention to me. This isn't working. And as long as you ignore your body, you're going to find yourself in distress. So go slow, go easy, show yourself grace. You don't have to do it all. Now, Anna and Elsa, this is really scary, the stuff we're talking about. And I know it's overwhelming and intimidating, but I also know you can do it. And all of you listening, I gotta tell you, you better give me some points here for not making a single reference about letting it go. All of you are in a community of women around the world who are in this with you. And I most definitely am too. Bye for now. I'm so grateful that you're here. You're right where you're supposed to be. At its heart, I'm hoping to use this show to build a community of women working together to heal from childhoods marked by maternal narcissism and emotional neglect. My goal for Mother Mayhem is that this show becomes an advice and mentoring-driven show where you share your questions, struggles, and stories, and I offer you direction for healing and recovery. That can't happen without your contributions. I invite you to send a recorded voice memo or write in an email with your questions and things you're struggling with. You can always find me over at heather@daughtersnpd.com. To connect further, I invite you to find me over at Instagram and occasionally on TikTok at daughtersnpd. If you know another woman who needs this conversation in her life, I'm going to ask that you share the show with her. You can help me get the word out with your reviews and social shares of the show, and I hope you'll consider doing so. Special thanks to Heather Clark for editing this show. She's in my head and knows what I meant to say when the words come out backwards. Thanks for your time today. I'm always in it with you. Bye for now.